Welcome back once again. It's time for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia University. It's a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practice. And this week, we have back with us, she must have done a good job last week here, Karen Freeberg's back again here. Hey, Karen.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Okay. So you passed the test, and they let you come back and play again here.
That is awesome. I'm really glad to be here.
So today, what are you talking about? It says on my notes here, the future of work in social media. Can this be true?
Yes, we are very honored to have one of the leading experts in the world on this topic, and I'm really happy to have Dennis Yu. We're actually doing something a little bit different this time. Instead of doing just virtual podcasting, Dennis is actually here right across the way from my office here in Louisville, Kentucky.
Wow. Okay. So we're connecting everybody from across the hallway here.
Pretty much. Yeah. So, but no, Dennis is one of the best, and he's a leading thought leader in the space and the industry, speaker, strategist, analyst. And so we're very fortunate to have him as a featured guest on this podcast. Dennis, thank you again for being part of our podcast session today. And the first question I wanted to bring up for the audience here is, we are getting a wave of young professionals who are becoming social media strategists. Their credibility, understanding of network are some things they weren't even trained to do. And so what type of advantage do young professionals have in the current social media space?
Well, I'll tell you this. If you look at the people that work in our program, Karen, which you know and seen many of them, they're half our age. I just turned 45 2 days ago, and we have 20-year-olds doing marketing on TikTok. Have you guys even heard of TikTok, Paul?
TikTok. I have no clue. I was trying to come up with a funny joke, but I can't even think of one. TikTok is not something I've ever heard of.
It's the most downloaded app in 2019. Oh, being downloaded faster than Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Google, all of these. And the young adults, because they natively grew up with an iPhone fused to their face, they understand social media. So they have a natural credibility as users, and that's something that they can lend towards starting social media agencies.
I have to ask, what does TikTok do?
It's a reincarnation of Vine.
Oh,
so it's fun,
okay.
15-second videos. And some of my friends have had millions of views for each of their videos. And they get sponsorships from Nike or different entertainment companies. But you even see companies like Under Armour or the NFL, and they might have only a couple hundred followers because it's brand new. That's the advantage you have with young adults. They grew up with social media. They grew up with phones in their faces, making videos, doing funny things. And if they just leverage that in the business, into helping businesses actually talk to customers that are under 30 and be in those channels, that's a massive opportunity to make significant money and do something that's good.
Yeah, that's the benefit of having digital natives, and they just have a different level of experience. So it's been fascinating, even as a professor, to kind of see how students approach and view different platforms. I mean, whenever I talk about certain platforms, they're like, oh, well, this is so like vintage or old. But then like with TikTok, it's really, people are really engaged with it. And so what are some of the other trends that you are seeing from the social media specialists who are coming out into the industry, Dennis?
They are able to tie branding and entertainment with commerce. And you typically have two sides of the house in marketing. You have direct marketing, which is driving sales, and you have branding, which is like, you know, Nike and Coke commercials. They're able to bring both together because what works in these short snippets are things that are entertaining enough to get the attention, like in Facebook's newsfeed or in YouTube, to get people to continue watching, yet also drive a sale. My friend Kieran O'Brien, he's 19 years old, and he runs an agency for high-end aftermarket automotive, so high-end sports cars. And he's got a team of people. He's making seven figures per year doing his agency. And all he does is follow the same process that we teach, which is setting up remarketing pixels, learning how to work with clients to measure those results, creating videos, like interviewing the business owners, interviewing customers, just like you would do in a podcast or as a journalist. And then putting that across Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Google, TikTok, Snapchat, LinkedIn, all these different channels. And that's something that young adults have a huge advantage doing. And then when they're able to measure the ROI, for example, in selling high-end aftermarket automotive, some of these parts are $7,000, $10,000, right? If you have a high-end sports car, you know how expensive these parts are. And every one of those sales might only cost a few hundred dollars to drive because of things like remarketing. So that's a huge opportunity for young adults to be able to leverage all the different social channels and driving results, because people my age don't even understand. I find I'm learning every day from the young adults in our program on what's the best way to connect with customers that are much younger than I am.
I want to kind of tap into one of the things that you had addressed, Dennis, just now. Could you explain a little bit about, for the audiences, about what is a repurposing pixel? Could you clarify that a little bit more for our audience?
So when you're on a website, all of these different tracking codes will fire at you. And some of them are for things like Google Analytics. Some of them are for advertising. Actually, most of them are advertising. You can use different tools like Ghostery and other Chrome plugins and see the average site has 50 to 60 of these little targeting pixels. So you know when you do some shopping, like you're on Amazon or you're on some other site, like I fly around a lot, so I see like a hotel. I'm going to be in Malaysia next month with the king and queen. I got invited. And I'm looking at hotels. And you know, when you see a hotel or you see red shoes or maroon colored shoes, those follow you around everywhere. The way they're able to follow you around is off of something that's called the remarketing pixel. So by dropping remarketing pixels on client sites, you leverage the power of all the platforms that it's not just something that only the large companies are able to do. Anybody can do that. This is what we teach in the dollar a day process. So by putting all those pixels in place, anyone who comes to a website, when they leave, you can follow them around. If their next website is LinkedIn or YouTube, then you can follow them around with another ad. Imagine how much extra revenue can be generated or how much revenue is being lost by 99% of websites that don't have a remarketing pixel.
For our audience, how much do social media marketers or managers make, and what do you charge clients?
That's one of the most common questions that we get. You actually Google that and you'll see my article right there at the top. So, So first off, there's two ways of charging. One is charging by time or retainer, X dollars per hour or X dollars per month. The other way to charge is by the result, which I think is actually the best way because you end up earning a higher hourly rate. Young adults who are just out of school, or maybe they're still in school, let's say that they're a sophomore at the University of Louisville, they can easily get by charging anywhere from $20 to $50 per hour. If you want to implement the remarketing pixels that I told you about, that might be 6 or 7 hours. So you might charge $300 to $500 to implement that. And then the ROI on that depends on how many additional sales that you can drive per month off of that initial setup and the advertising that goes into that. If you charge on a performance basis, let's say that my friend who does the aftermarket auto parts, he could say, instead of charging labor or charging you $2,000 a month or X dollars per month, I'm going to charge you 20% of all the sales that I'm able to drive. And most business owners will go for that, right? We have a fitness equipment company as a client, and instead of them paying us a fee, they pay us 20% of all the sales that we're able to drive because we put the tracking in place. We put the remarketing pixels. We can track exactly how many phone calls, how many sales, how many people walk into the store. So we have Ashley Furniture as a client. They have 710 stores, largest furniture seller on the planet, and we track how many people come into the stores and buy. And then we charge based on how much sales we drive instead of the old-fashioned, well, it's going to be $10,000 a month, it's going to be $20,000 a month, or it's how many hours. What business owner wants to track how many hours there were? For example, Karen, let's say you had to do an emergency surgery procedure. Would you rather go to the surgeon that takes three times as many hours? That's like talking to a golf professional that takes three times as many shots to finish the round, right?
Right.
You wouldn't want that. So for young adults, instead of making 10 bucks an hour at Chili's or what have you, imagine that they can make triple that right off the bat by implementing things that deliver clear, measurable business value. And then they can move into a performance deal. Once you have to start hourly and by package, because unless you're good, you see, if you're not good and you try to charge on performance, then you're losing money because you're not able to drive the sales, or worse, you're wasting money that the client has, or wasting your own money on advertising.
Gotcha. Well, before we go to our break, there's one question I wanted to ask you, Dennis. There is a big discussion related to whether to go to college or not. And what would be things you have learned in college that you wouldn't trade for?
The relationships that I developed were something that I, as a young, arrogant, young adult, didn't realize. It's what you don't know that you don't know. I had Al Casey, who was the CEO of American Airlines, as one of my mentors. How to get him as a mentor? Because he was an adjunct professor. I took one of the classes on business and he took me aside and said, son, you have a smile that could sell toothpaste for the toothpaste company. I thought, well, if I just got really good grades, that's all I really needed to do. You know, I'm one of those Asian 4.0 kinds of kids. But he taught me about relationships. He taught me about what the real value of college was, which is being able to learn how to learn and manage your time and be able to balance and run teams and be able to communicate. And I find that programs like what you have, Dr. Karen, are absolutely fantastic because you're giving these students you're shortcutting their learning curve because they're able to meet professionals and get work experience without having to learn the hard way by being out there in the workplace and being an entrepreneur. And if you want to be an entrepreneur and you already know what you want to do, great. You can bypass college. And maybe that's right for some people. But I find that there's nothing as strong as a foundation of a college degree. I have two college degrees. And even though it's fashionable right now to hate on college, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
That's really great, because I think that has been something that I know as an educator and even our audiences as young professionals, this has been something that you hear repeated over and over again. Some people say you got to go to college. Some people say it's overrated. You need the real world experience. And so I really do appreciate, you know, for the clarification of our audience, you know, just your experience and what were some of the benefits that you get from your various programs, and you're seeing it also from the industry side. So this has been, again, very refreshing to hear. And thank you again, Dennis, for sharing that with our audiences. Now we will be going and taking a break.
We're just going to take a pause here and let that sink in a little bit here. That I thought that was a fascinating discussion about college versus no college here and when it works and when it doesn't. But there's a place that can give you even more insight. It's West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program. It's the first graduate program of its kind in the country, and it's online. It focuses on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The Data Marketing Communications Program at WVU prepares you for your career by learning innovative tactics from award-winning faculties. Make the connection and learn from the pros. You can learn more at dmc.wvu.edu. 9 simple letters, dmc.wvu.edu, that can change your life. All right, I'm going to continue to change my life. I'm going to change the page. I filled it up with so many notes here, so I'll let you guys pick it back up where you left off here.
Awesome. Thank you, Paul. We're back. And again, Dennis, one of the things that I know that, you know, just kind of witnessing your travels all over the world, you spend a lot of time at certain headquarters like Facebook. And so for those of us who have not been to the Facebook headquarters and their offices around the planet, what is it like? What's the environment like? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, Karen, you know, because we got to have lunch at Facebook headquarters one time.
And that is true.
Yes. What do you think about that? They have barbecue. They have the main cafeteria. You know, Google, their campus in Mountain View has my favorite because they have a main cafeteria, Building 45, but then they have little buildings surrounding it that specialize in sushi and Mexican and vegan and vegetarian and so forth. They have one building where the cafeteria is dedicated just to sushi, and they actually will fly in chefs from Japan. And another Google cafeteria, I think it was Wednesday, they had I want to say it was Afghanistan, and they flew in a chef from Afghanistan to be able to actually teach and make authentic dishes. LinkedIn might be my second favorite in San Jose. They have an incredible salad bar that goes on and on. If you've been to Caesar's Palace in Vegas and the Bacchanal Buffet, mm-hmm. I think that's the number one buffet in the U.S. Some people say the Wynn is about like that. They have buffets at that level. And the amount of money, I was talking with one of the Google chefs last week, and he was telling me the amount of money they spend on meat, for example. They have an unlimited budget. So this guy who was working out of just one of the Google offices, not the main one in Mountain View, not even the big one in Seattle, but one that's a little further out, like in Renton, he said he was spending $20,000 a week just on meat to feed 600 people.
Wow.
Just on meat, like the highest quality grade meat. Twitter is not, the cafeteria is kind of dark. I think Apple's at the very bottom. Have you ever been to Apple, to their headquarters?
I haven't,
you know,
no.
Cafeteria? It's like a school cafeteria, like a bad school cafeteria, and it's overpriced too. It's like $9 for a cheeseburger and french fries, right? When I was at Yahoo, I would actually not eat in the restaurants or whatever because I would just eat at the cafeteria. I remember it was $1.65. I'd ride my bike. I lived in Mountain View, so I'd ride my bike 5.2 miles down the Stephen Creeks Trail, shower, work out in the gym that's there, go eat food at the Yahoo cafeteria, $1.65. I had two gigantic pancakes. The chefs would slice in bananas and bacon and sausage and all that while the pancakes were cooking, and then smear peanut butter over the top. It's called the Elvis, and I could get full on that. But that's what tech companies do. And that's why some of these people are working 70, 80 hours per week, because you have dry cleaning. I remember they had on-site dental, they had childcare, they had everything, so you never needed to leave. Because if you need to leave, you got to go to the parking garage, then you have to drive all the way to the restaurant and get seated. You're out for an hour and a half. how much is an engineer's time worth for an hour and a half? Do you know what the average Facebook, not even the top end, the average Facebook engineer makes?
I have no idea.
$147,000.
Wow. Amazing.
So it's worth it to keep people there.
Absolutely.
And
well,
when you start to work, when you work in tech, you see what happens, right?
Right.
The wild side.
Yeah, well, I definitely was sold at Facebook. They had free coffee, so I was definitely a fan of them. But I wanted to kind of switch gears a little bit, Dennis, because this is the topic, future of social. And one of the questions that we have as educators and as professionals is how do we prepare the next generation? And so what are things that educators and professionals in various programs can do to help prepare and train the next generation?
They should buy your social media textbook. They should follow you and do exactly what you're doing, like inviting guests and reaching out to the community and arranging jobs and projects. Working professionals and the academic sector are so far apart. And that's what breaks my heart. I would love to see more academics and professionals unify the curriculum that we're teaching. We were talking about this at lunch a little bit earlier about how some of the curriculum that was from 15 years ago is still taught today, and it hasn't updated for the fact that digital has completely changed the landscape. So seeing what, you know, West Virginia is doing, especially with things like online and podcasting and radio, I think that's absolutely fantastic because we're all learning how to communicate. And communication and being able to work with clients is the key thing that I see students not getting the experience because they're more trained to consume, to do homework and maybe write a paper instead of actually interact, actually produce content, actually work on live campaigns, actually make some money too, right? Imagine that. You said a lot of the kids here at Louisville are working two jobs at the same time because they're funding their way through school. I would love to see educators have more tie-in with the real world, just like our friend Dr. Karen Sutherland at the University of the Sunshine Coast. I'd love to see what she's doing with having these students each start their own micro agency. Think about how valuable that expertise is.
Absolutely. And Karen is one of the leaders in kind of preparing the students and young professionals for the future of social. And that really kind of brings down to our final question for you, Dennis. In the future of social media and the work in social media, what works and what doesn't work in running a digital agency with young professionals entering a market where there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of trends that are coming up?
Well, the number one thing that agencies are missing, whether they're young adults or otherwise, is a lack of process. And there's a fake kind of process from account management. Account management is, okay, we have a new client. Let's put them inside our tracking system like Basecamp or Google Sheets. Let's have weekly calls. Let's deliver a report. Let's take the client out to eat once in a while, or maybe if we can in person, or send them a Christmas card. But increasingly, because everything's moving to digital and the mass amount of digital is being consumed on phones and via ads, if you're a young adult or if you're hiring other young adults to be in your agency, you've got to have a clear process on how you're able to collect the goals, content, and targeting for that client and then execute that into measurable results. We talked earlier about the pixels and something that's called digital plumbing, which is all that measurement. 90%+ of the agencies that we see, and we coach hundreds of agencies, they don't even have that kind of measurement. So then when the client says, hey, I'm paying you $2,000 a month, what have you done for me? Well, I've done this and this and this. Okay, but is that even valuable? Okay, you rebuilt my website, but is that driving me more sales? And when you can't measure the ROI, then you get the client eventually leaving. And that's why you see the churn so high in agencies. You see the average client lasting 3 to 4 months. Isn't that crazy? That most clients
that
don't even last a year with an agency. And then how much cost is that on the agency side when they have to go out and acquire new customers because they're bleeding these clients right out the door? What's working is having very clear processes and starting with measurement and goals first. Right. The goals are, here's how much I need to drive in sales and what a sale's worth. And here's the content who I'm trying to reach. And here's how we are doing. So before the agency starts, they have to take a snapshot saying, okay, this is how you did in the 90 days before we start. Now we started and we take another snapshot every month and we can prove, hey, we've generated an extra $300 in sales each month for you. Right. And so we can justify our $10,000 a month fee or whatever it is. And then it's just a matter of having people reliably execute the checklists. So you and I fly a lot, Karen, right? You're going to go to New York to speak at a social media strategy conference. And can you imagine if you got on a plane and that pilot said, you know what? I've been flying for a long time. I don't need to use the pre-flight checklist. I don't need to talk to air traffic control. We don't need to use the checklist to make sure that the landing gear's working, that the avionics are working, that we have enough fuel, right, that we have a clear flight path. You know what? We're going to do something new this time. What do you say? We don't want to do things the old way. Let's innovate, right? How many times do you hear people say, oh, yeah, I want to innovate and do something new? That means you're likely to crash, which you don't want to do in your marketing. You want to drive sales. Mm-hmm. Unless the client says their goal is just to do something for the sake of it. Like the work we did with Tide as part of Procter & Gamble, they wanted to be the first to do Facebook commerce. You go to Facebook, go to their Facebook page. This is like 10 years ago. Actually, it's more than that. It's like 14 years ago. You can go to their Facebook page and actually buy a giant 120-ounce family-sized thing of Tide from a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And we had like two sales. But they're able to declare, ta-da, we're the first ones to be able to sell on a Facebook page.
Awesome, Dennis. Well, we are going to have to wrap up, but I want to take a moment to thank you for sharing your expertise and insights with all of us. For everyone who is listening, make sure to research and follow Dennis on social. He truly is one of the best in our industry on the future of social.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice. Only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.